You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
I don't know whether it's cool to admit that Magnum PI was one of my all-time favorite shows. You know, back in the day, I'm 6'4". I had the dark kind of curly hair. I had the dark mustache.
Did you have that mustache?
I had really short shorts.
Oh, I do remember that.
I always wore a hat, a sunglass. You know, I got the hey, you know, you remind me of, but I don't get that anymore.
I used to listen to this show, at the very least, just for the theme song.
Really?
Yeah, that, Rockford Files. Yeah, I used to love that.
You need a life.
They're all by the same guys.
Folks, a one-time actor, comedian, and the youngest writer to work for comedy legend Bob Hope, Tom Shadyac's writing, directing career was launched in 1994 with the Jim Carrey smash hit Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. In the years that followed, Tom would establish himself as one of the most prolific comedy writers in Hollywood while working with some of the biggest names in the business. Huge hits such as Liar Liar, The Nutty Professor, Bruce Almighty, Patch Adams, Accepted, and I Now Pronounce You, Chuck and Larry have helped establish him as one of Hollywood's most successful writer, director, producers. A Virginia native, Tom has received 4 People's Choice Awards, including 3 for Best Comedy, Liar Liar, The Nutty Professor, Bruce Almighty, and 1 for Best New Television Comedy with 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. I think the Three's Company guy was in that, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. With Patch Adams, he earned his first Golden Globe nomination. Can I just say, do you remember the interview I did with
yes.
the real Patch Adams?
Yep.
Hunter Patch Adams?
Yep.
That's a standout for me, that one.
Why so?
Because he kicked my Christian
butt.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Mine too, I guess, because we're together here.
Anyway, in his latest project, a documentary entitled I Am, Tom asks some of today's most profound thinkers 2 questions. What's wrong with our world, and what can we do about it? This moving, inspiring film won the Audience Choice Award and the Student Choice Award at the Mountain Film Festival in Telluride, I don't know, somewhere in Colorado. What's the name of the town, Tom, in Colorado? Who?
Telluride. Yeah, it's a beautiful mountain town there. Keep going, man. You're on a roll.
No, I'm done. These long intros, I don't know why the heck we do this. It's just like, really?
Man. Yeah, you've read it all. I also received an A on a science project in 7th grade. You missed that one.
You know what? Seriously, the coolest thing about you is the role that you had in Magnum P.I.
Yeah, I saw you pick that one out. I played a spaced-out surfer guy. Got a week in Hawaii and hung out with Tom Selleck. It was hard to do mainland TV after that.
Yeah, It was hard to do Trapper John after that.
Yeah, that's right. You're going deep into the resume, my brother. Somehow you're going to connect that beautiful interview with Jean Vanier and Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. I can't wait to hear how
yeah.
you do this.
All I know is that the middle piece, the connecting dot is Kevin Bacon. I know, just all I know. Actually,
Beautifully said.
The coolest thing about you, Mr. Shadyac, is that you were the creator of the preppy poster?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, that's right. Back in, I forget. It was pre-cell phone. At the University of Virginia, my fraternity had drank themselves into about an $8,000 beer drinking debt. And I created this poster to help them out, and it sold, and I turned it into a business, and onward and upward from there. Yeah.
Well done. I had that poster, dude. That
Thank
was
you,
awesome.
Brother.
Yeah, I picked
Thank
it up.
You.
Picked it up at the Kmart poster rack. You know.
Thank you, man. Thank you. You've been supporting my career, obviously, all the way back to Magnum PI.
Yep.
So I appreciate you.
It was
Thank
either
you.
That poster or Farrah Fawcett. My mom and dad would not allow Farrah Fawcett. So.
Well, the preppy guy is actually much, much sexier. It's a lot more subtle. So.
Youngest joke writer for Bob Hope.
That's
kind of a cool thing to have in your resume. Come on.
Bizarre. I know I teach college now, and I tell them my students I wrote for Bob Hope, and they look at me like the RCA dog, head tilted to the side, like, who are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my goodness, the time has turned, the clock has turned.
Yeah.
So he was a comic to your listeners who was very prominent in my parents' generation.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
How about that?
You're like Bob Hope. Is he like Carrot Top? Yeah.
Yeah. Carrot Top with about $1 billion. Yeah.
Okay, Evan Almighty, was it the most expensive comedy ever made?
I think that's been surpassed, but yeah, it was up there. The water effects were nobody knew going in what it was going to cost, and had I been able to chat with Noah, I would have known how much an arc would cost to reproduce. But yeah, it was expensive. So Yeah, right. I spent a little too much on that one. So, guilty.
I saw you on Oprah last year, and I don't get wowed by too many people being interviewed these days. I guess I'm just numb and desensitized. I'm a jerk. I have the spiritual gift of pessimism. And you kicked me in the butt, you, just like that interview with Jean Vanier. It was kind of cool. So I want to, you know, for a year, been trying to get you, man. I mean, the only person I've tried to get harder than you are guys like Sting or James Taylor. So, you know, you're in good company, man.
Wow. Well, I didn't know I was that reclusive or difficult. But I know we've been traveling. We've been traveling with a movie. So I have been on the road a lot. And maybe that's why it's been difficult. So, let's make up for it. What can I do for you?
All right. Determine what God has given you and take from it what you need. The rest is needed by others.
Yes.
I guess that's the end of the interview right there.
Well, that's the start and the beginning, I know. And Jean Vanier said it, you know, and at the end I heard just the very last part of his interview, and he said the beauty you find in serving others who've been pushed aside, and I believe he's talking about his beautiful community. And there are so many others that have been pushed aside, you know, through the way we do economy with each other, this game we play of have and have nots. And when you see that and you trace really where wealth comes from back to its roots, you see that it doesn't have to be this way. And I don't want to be one to push people aside. You know, if you look at just about any great fortune, it's built on the backs of people who can barely feed their family. And I want to eliminate that. You know, the Christian folk have a saying of you can't serve two masters, God and money. Yet we kind of ignore it in our daily lives. You know, we claim this gospel that Jesus wants us all wealthy, and I think he wants us all wealthy, but not in a way that we define wealth.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
In a much truer way.
And to me, it's interesting that the majority of vastly wealthy people that I know, maybe it's just the scene of the circle, you know, that I run in, they're Jesus people. So you can't serve two guys. You can't. Rich Christian to me, like a filthy rich Christian, monetarily speaking, has always been an oxymoron in my. But to me, it's hilarious how many Christians are filthy rich.
Yeah, it really speaks to how asleep we are. You know what a good mesmerist can do? They can, you know, through the power of suggestion, just put you asleep and then make you publicly, you know, pat your belly or rub your belly and pat your head, you know, and you do all kinds of silly things unaware. And we don't see the hypocrisy. It amazes me. And I was a part of that, quote, rich Christian group. I'm still undoing, you know, that wealth in my own life. I have more to go, more to share. But I hope I'm committed to the path, certainly. I know I'm committed to the path. But you don't think about it, you know. You don't think about it. You think, oh, I've been blessed with so much. You never think how you get it, you know, that the janitor who's sweeping the floors of the studio at night is actually a part of the system that rewards you so heavily.
Yeah, unfairly, and, yeah.
Yeah, unfairly, yeah. And when you look at that, when I saw that, actually really what did it for me is I saw how nature worked, and I believe that omnipresence is not a rumor, as the poet Hafiz says. That, in other words, God's in everything. So you can see the workings of the divine in nature, and nothing in nature takes more than it needs. When nature works well together, it's in full cooperation. So nothing is taking more than it needs. And here we are taught in our culture, and I was one of those taught, to take as much as I can. That is defined. That's the definition of success, and you'll be on the cover of magazines, and people will hold you up as an example to our young. And that's so twisted, you know, especially in a Judeo-Christian nation, and we just don't look at it. So we always point outside. Everybody today wants somebody else to change. We need Congress to pass laws. We need corporations to be less greedy. And it really starts with us individually. All these institutions are a reflection of us. When we think of wealth in terms of true wealth being sharing with others and propping others and helping others, giving a hand, lending a hand, when we really believe that in our hearts, everything around us is going to change. So,
man, you're like a white MLK.
Hey, man, I'll take any comparison to that man possible. Any comparison possible. Thank you.
Tom, how soon after the bike accident in 07 did you begin to develop Sidney Crosby syndrome?
Sidney Crosby syndrome is what exactly?
That's like bad. See, if you were a hockey fan, man, you'd know it, right?
Sorry. Is that bad concussion stuff?
Yeah.
Well, football players get it, and I'm, you know, a cyclist and a surfer and a, you know, skier and all that. I've had my share of concussions. But It was real. It was fairly immediate. I got a bike accident, not a bad one, routine concussion, but I had pulled all the concussion chips out of the bank, and this turned into a brutal thing that, as you say, a lot of hockey players go through. And I thought that was it, you know, and nothing like facing your own death to put things, the house in order, and you see what's important.
Yeah, now you say you faced your own death, but how? I mean, like, other than wanting to die because of having to cope with all the brutal side effects of your head injury.
Yeah. Well, it was just a feeling and a knowing that I wasn't going to make it long. If this was it, if this was as good as my health was going to be, I simply wasn't going to live long, and I knew that. And that's what forced me to make this movie. A lot of people think it's why I changed and why I gave away lots of money. I had some kind of spiritual awakening. No, that was going on for years through reading people like Henry Nouwen and others, Thomas Merton and poets and et cetera, Emerson and Thoreau, et cetera, and putting all these pieces of the puzzle together. But I've been changing my life over the course of a decade, and then after the bike accident, I simply wanted to tell a story about it and share the journey that I'd been on and offer that up for a conversation that we could have.
The first time I heard this was, my immediate default was this. Head injury, all of a sudden he's given away, you know, his wealth. I mean, it's because of the head injury. You're still not right.
Well said. And we'll be back at Fox News after a commercial break. If I was wrong, I was wrong well before the head injury.
Right.
I simply never felt that it was due to me, even when it was coming in the early days, like when Liar Liar is where it started to really kick in, sort of the financial paydays, if you will, and it never felt right. It didn't feel like mine. I guess I hadn't been poisoned enough for it to ever feel like mine. I believe that art, talent, which we all have, whether you're a lawyer, a doctor, whatever, you're an artist, all art is a gift, right? We are given gifts, and if we serve those gifts well, then this money comes our way. But I don't think of it as mine. I think of it as all of ours,
yeah,
as sharing.
But that's not new in your life, man. I mean, community service, philanthropy, othering is what I like to call it. I mean, that's in the blood. Like, your dad started St. Jude's Children's Hospital with Danny Thomas, and my condolences for his passing a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
freaking horrible. But, I mean, you were even in the Key Club, dude.
Yes, the true service industry, the Key Club was... actually a good service organization in high school. But look, my dad brought a lot of things into my life, right? He also brought law into my life, and he wanted me to be a lawyer. But I saw how that worked, and I was not one who wanted to argue to be right. I thought our whole system was off. We should be arguing for the truth instead of trying to be right. So I didn't grab onto that. But he did introduce me to this idea of serving those in need, and that felt amazing. That brought with it a light. You know, and a quality of life that's actually, as I've discovered through science, is really hardwired in our DNA. And that is the kind of crack that I want in my life, the crack of connection, if you will. And so I moved in the direction of really what feels true and right. So, yeah, it has been in my genes, as was the same economy, you know, that I served in serving the master money. So it's been a matter for me of taking and continuing what works and what I feel is beautiful and true and letting the rest go. So it's simply a matter of going towards the joy,
yeah.
You know, and the joy is not in the stuff, you know. It's such a simplistic statement, but we just don't believe it, you know.
Because if we believed it, we'd do it. We'd live differently.
Yeah, of course. And here's the good news and why I think we're going to make this, why we think we're going to make this transition, because it's better. It just works. You find your life buzzing with a happiness and a quality. I call it, again, the crack of connection. It works. You know, when you reach out into another person's life and simply serve a meal, say, to someone who's hungry, whether it's a homeless person or a person in transition or in need, there is a feeling that comes with that. I didn't invent that feeling. You know, that came with the designer, the grand designer, you know, divinity said, I think I've got to craft goodness and love more powerful than hate and division, because I don't think this species will make it if I don't. You know, if hate was more powerful than love, we wouldn't make it. We'd all be hating on each other. But guess what? Every time we start a war, we want it to end. We don't want it to continue. We want it to end because love is truly hardwired as more powerful than hate. So anybody who thinks of this as minimalism is just sort of seeing it through fear.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to take from me? I don't want to take anything from anybody. What I have to offer is what all the mystics have had to offer, which is what Jean Vanier has to offer, which is this incredible joy at serving some higher good.
All right, how's your double wide?
It's very good. I you know, I live in a beautiful place, and it costs money to live there. And I'm actually going to minimalize even more, but again, maximalize, because I believe that there'll be more resources that I can again share with others and take some kind of new investment. I used to invest in old master's paintings and Persian carpets, and I now invest in people and healing the natural world, etc. And I like that sort of investment.
Folks, if you're unaware of this backstory, and I like how you, I think we're using this word a little too often, I like how you minimalize the story here, because, and that's one of the things that kind of won me over when I saw you do the Oprah thing. People are like, oh, you gave up a 17,000 foot square home, square foot home, and you, it's 17 bedrooms and 13 bathrooms, and now you're living in a 1,000 square foot, you know, mobile home, and people were like, whoa, that's awesome, woohoo, and you're like, yeah, but hold on, let's not make too big a deal out of this. It's still the nicest freaking mobile home park in California. It's in Malibu. You're overlooking the ocean. It's, you know, it's a beauty place. And I loved how you just kind of played that down. Well done.
Well, it's, you know, I'm about the truth, and I don't like the headline because it's sensational, you know.
And but that's the hook. That really, you got to be honest, that's the hook.
I know it's a hook, but it's to me, it's not truthful. It's a hook. It's an advertising hook. It's kind of gimmicky, and look, it's been steps for me. It's a process. You know, it's kind of like rehab, you know, because I do, you know, in the film I am, I don't know if you've seen it, but I call myself mentally ill. And I don't do that as a joke. You know, what is a mental illness? But not seeing things as they are. And if you have been taught to separate yourself, that's our, you know, it was a mantra when I was in school, separate yourself from the pack. And if you've got to be number one, you got to separate yourself from the pack. That was the whole mantra. So you could go to the right schools, and that means your neighbor doesn't go to the right schools. You never think about the neighbor, you know, when you're getting the A, and then the other person is average, and they get a C, and they can't go, you know, on the right track.
Yeah.
So anyway, the sensationalism isn't what it's about. It's been steps for me. I have more to go. I'm a completely flawed character in this story, but this I know, the principles are not flawed.
Yeah.
The principles are not flawed, and I want to move and grab onto those principles with all that I am.
Yeah, and I want to paint this picture accurately as well. The guy's not living some life on the street kind of life. I mean, you have the same Breville coffee maker that they have in the 2.5 Men set.
I do.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
that. Yeah, and now PC.
I don't even drink coffee. Do I have a coffee maker? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. BC, before Charlie Sheen. In the days of Charlie Sheen, that's the same coffee. I pay attention to the set stuff there. So.
Yeah, geez, I didn't even realize that. It's apparently not mine. So
no.
Somebody else may have placed that in mine, because I don't drink coffee.
I know, because.
Way to notice, my friend.
I thought it was an anomaly. It's like seeing the wristwatch on Gladiator or something, you know. It didn't make sense.
Yeah. No, I'm not even aware of what you're talking about.
Okay, all right. let's move on.
I mean, look, if anybody saw where I lived and how I lived, look, it's out of the paradigm.
Yeah.
I live in a mobile home park. I don't own the land. I, you know, we live in, you know, 1,000 square foot to 1,500 square foot places.
Yeah.
It's out of the paradigm. It's not what you shoot for.
How many staff did you have before?
Oh,
go through the list, because I find that list funny.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
Like,
come on.
I need staff to keep track of the staff. I mean, I had a house manager and, if you go through all the therapists, you know, but I had a full-time housekeeper, and I had a full-time gardener and a pool man, and then I had somebody come and maintain the olive trees and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, and an accountant and an accountant taking care of my accountant. It was crazy. You know,
does the fact that you're now that Tom Shadyac, the guy with the getting rid of materialism story thing, does that ever play into whether or not you buy something? Do you ever, you know, really want to buy something and go, dang, I can't because I'm that Tom Shadyac?
Never. Literally never. because it's not the story that I'm selling.
Yeah.
It's not what I care about. Somebody may find God in a material item. That's not for me to judge. I may find God. Right now I'm a bicyclist, and while I haven't bought a bike in a few years, I certainly would if I felt some connection to the joy I could experience. Yeah. You know, it's not about that. I think we all have to do what our hearts tell us to do, and I think that God made us creative, and there is material in the world. We are matter. I love that matter is called matter because it does matter. So I'm not about selling this idea that we're just to float around spirits. We are in the physical.
Has this whole thing changed your relationship with certain people? For example, how do you do what you've done but not either, A, be preachy about it or be perceived as preachy about it?
Yeah, I'm so not worried about that. I think we're way carried away with the idea of being preachy. All of life instructs, Emerson said. You preach. The person who tells you don't preach because you're being preachy is being preachy about not being preachy. So, all of life instructs, and you stand for something at every moment. You know, I think where preachiness gets overbearing is when I say I'm right and you're wrong.
Right, right.
I'm having a very real experience for me. I see that experience shared across the ages and millennia,
yeah.
And that experience is exciting to me, and it's beautiful to me, and challenging to me, and I share that experience, and I think it offers a vision of the world that's beautiful. Whether we take that or not, or you see it or not, or somebody else does or not, is not me to judge. The results are not up to me. So I try to keep that, walk that line, and everything takes care of itself.
Yeah, but do you get uninvited to the Hollywood part? Or maybe you get invited, seriously, people are sitting in, the Goldie Hawn goes, should we invite Tom? No, because we just bought this new, $15,000 furniture set or whatever, and he's going to judge us, and I'm not sure, maybe we should hide the jewelry before Tom comes over.
I just had a very big producer say to me, and he's a beautiful man, and he just, he had me over to his house, and he said, Tom, I was looking around, I was watching your movie actually this morning, and I just want to let you know, I was thinking, do I need all this? Do I need all this? And it's so not about that. Look, I make judgments of no one. I can tell you this, that since I have become more authentic, meaning that, I always cared about this stuff. I never wanted to go to a Hollywood party and talk box office. I wanted to talk about the newest book, poetry book by Rumi or Hafiz or Mary Oliver, or tell them about, a sentence in Emerson that just blew my doors off.
Yeah.
That I had read. That's all I wanted to talk about. And everybody else was wanted to talk about, the latest comics, and it just wasn't my thing. So since I've become more authentic, authenticity has been drawn to me. So I just went to a Hollywood party, and I had the most beautiful conversations about God,
yeah,
with someone like Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
Martin Sheen saw I Am. He's a beautiful soul. He loved the film. I just saw his film The Way, and we talked about God. We didn't talk about box office because now I'm not putting that kind of energy out.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That's cool. I found the same thing. I've had some very interesting meetings in the last year with some L.A. people. Actually, some of them you might even know. Do you know? Oh, sorry. Excuse us, folks, while Tom and I have a personal moment. Do you know someone named Bryn Friedman?
I think so. Does she work with Free the Slaves?
Yes.
I believe?
Yes.
Yes, I do. Of course.
Okay.
I know. Yeah.
Well, Bryn and I are working
on
some stuff together, and we were introduced together by a guy named Ken Hertz, and Ken has been Will Smith's attorney for a while, 15 years, and a bunch of other, Beyonce and Black Eyed Peas, and et cetera, et cetera. And my initial, that's a weird world for me. I've never schmoozed in that scene whatsoever. And so when I had my first initial schmooze scenario with these people, I had an impression of what they were going to be like. But I walked away from hanging out with those people thinking, man, you know what? I have found a new family. I can really enjoy these conversations. Really enjoy these conversations. So it has jack to do with the fact that they're in the industry. It has to do with what kind of person are they?
Absolutely. That's what I missed when I was making this movie and I wasn't with my friends in Hollywood. They're great people. They're great lights. They have so much talent, so much creativity. It's a joy to be around them. And they have problems just,
yep,
like everybody. Just like everybody.
Yep.
The same problems around the dinner table of people with millions as there are with others. They struggle with personal relationships. They struggle with making the right decision in their life. And look, I find them wonderful.
Yeah. So, as do I. Okay, yeah. Look, you say you've been on a spiritual quest for truth your whole stinking life.
Yeah.
So what's...
I like how you put my life and stinking in the same in the same sentence. I bet you didn't say that to Jean Vanier.
No, I didn't. Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. Let's just back that one up.
It's all good.
What's the difference between a spiritual quest for truth and just a quest for truth, first of all?
None. I think the word spiritual is overused. It has to... The spirit and the body are they're married here on this planet, you know? The trick is to be in the world but not of the world, right? That's the whole the whole trick. So the fact... Look, it took me 1 second. I'm going to suck up on radio here to fall in love with you, because it wasn't a spiritual talk show that floated. Oh, we're in All Things Considered now, and we're floating. You know, and the second I heard you speak, like, who is this dude? He's using the word dude, and he feels like you feel earthy to me, and that's what's missing, right? That's why people look at, quote, spiritual people, and they're like, no thanks, I'm not like that. You know, we need the contact in the spiritual, so I don't think there's any difference. It's really a life. It's all in the ball of life.
Nice. I'm glad you picked up on that. Thanks, man. Now, your earliest memory of this quest?
Oh, my goodness. The second I heard about this Jesus cat, I was like, I don't know who that guy is, but whoever he is, he has a power about his story that I have not heard in any of these other things I'm being told or sold.
Yeah, but Tom, you grew up in Catholicism, and then did you not bail on that stuff?
Well, I bailed on the dogma, certainly. Yeah. Dogma is God spelled backwards twice. Dog, meaning God backwards, and ma, which is am, the original pronunciation of God, articulation of God, is I am. Dogma is God spelled backwards twice. I don't think it's an accident. So I bailed on the dogma fairly quickly. And,
right.
And yeah, I was a kid in Catholic school raising my hand going, wait a second. You're telling me that there's a boy in India who's going to go where because they were raised in a different faith? I didn't quite get it. And then years later, of course, I met, you know, a monk named Thomas Merton who saw the beauty in all faiths, and he made me realize the original meaning of Catholic meant universal, you know, and just how we've sort of gone askew into exclusivity. So
you're a universalist.
Well, let's put it this way. It's not my formula, but omnipresence means everywhere. When you say Christ is all in all, that doesn't leave out the person that doesn't even believe he existed, right? He still is all in all, right? So, you know, I actually believe that. I think the very thing that animates us is God. You know, without God, I couldn't be having this conversation. I say the phrase, how are you, which we use as a colloquialism, how are you, like, how are you doing? I say, how are you? Like, how are you? How are you even talking to me? That, to me, is divinity. And God shows up everywhere. So, yeah, that's me.
Okay, so no one wants to have labels these days, right? Like, for example, this last year I've been processing a crisis of faith, and I've been public about it. And the weirder thing has been people's response to my crisis of faith, not the actual crisis of faith. So now when I get pushed on, what are you? What do you believe? Like Tony Campolo got right up my nostrils about this, and I had to come up with something. So at this point I'm telling people I'm a red-letter agnostic theist.
I got to hold on a second. One second. A red letter, agnostic theist.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
And pretty soon, we're going to have a cult of red letter agnostic theists, and then we're going to have a splinter group.
Yes.
You're going to have to, like, you know, then you're going to have to become something else.
Yeah, so, yeah, because Jean Vanier says, the history of humanity is simply one group breaking away from another group and then putting up walls.
Exactly. Definition is the death of discovery.
All right. So define yourself.
Oh my God. Okay, I will. I'll define myself this way. Again, I'll steal a line from the poet. I would like to be, this is my hope, to be a hole in the flute that the Christ breath moves through. I want to be a hole in the flute that the Christ breath moves through, meaning whatever music I play with my life, let it be a reflection of divinity through this instrument. Not of me, but of divinity. That's it, baby. That's my definition for now. I can change it. It can shift. But that's where I'm at.
Okay, so
right now.
So I know you read a lot. I know you study a lot. I know you have great admiration for a variety of spiritual teachers. But is there one great teacher? And I hesitate using that phrase because I don't know. There's something in the back of my evangelical days that triggers on when I use great teacher. You know, people say, well, Christ is more than just a great teacher. Okay, I understand that. But getting past that, is there a great teacher that you follow the most?
Yes, experience.
Dang. I'm trying to pin you down.
Well, you can pin me down to the teacher of experience. Now, I see experience reflected in all kinds of great teachers, but it is truly experience.
Right.
Experience. You know, I don't read a line even from Jesus, and I've had to look at some of the lines that are supposedly coming from Jesus, and I've had to test them. And I've had to have, I think, the courage sometimes to say, well, maybe that one got doctored, you know.
Like cleanliness is next to godliness?
Well, in my fraternity days, I would have said absolutely. That can't be right. But so experience is my greatest teacher.
Okay, let me ask you this: heroes. Many people today, Oprah is their hero, and in other words, a micromanaging workaholic is their hero. For many people, Steve Jobs has been their hero. In other words, a Buddhist workaholic has been their hero. But for some, Christopher Hitchens, an alcoholic workaholic. These are our heroes. Who is your hero?
I don't have any.
Come on.
Yeah, truth. Look, any hero that is the right hero, it's like when you find the Buddha, you shoot that identifies himself as the Buddha, you shoot the Buddha. Now, there are many people whose lives I find so much beauty in, but to hero worship is a form of idolatry to me. I can go sit at the feet of someone and say, oh, my goodness, is divinity do work in miracles through you? Tell me what you know. You're amazing. There's a poet named Mary Oliver who's become a dear friend of mine. She's the best-selling poet in America. I will sit at her foot, you know, on her footstool and say, tell me, teach me. But she's not a hero.
Yeah.
You know, she's not a hero of mine.
Okay.
You know? So,
what about your dad? Because, I mean, you know, your dad, and I mean, they're like the movie you talk of. I mean, there's a lot of dad stuff in your life, man.
Yeah, well, yeah, my father did heroic work, and he also did some work that was very human and needs to be rethought. And that heroic work that he did is beautiful, and I want to be a part of that as much as possible. My brother actually now runs the hospital, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
Yeah.
And I want to be as much a part of that as I can. But, no, I don't. You know, I'll say something, like some young kids who work at Invisible Children, a great charity that is ending the longest-running war in Africa and freeing child soldiers. They're heroes to me, but they're not heroes. I don't sit at their feet and worship. The work that they do, the hearts that they have, are truly heroic.
Mm.
But I just look at it differently, you know. Emerson said, don't look at me. That's what he meant when he said self-reliance. It's not a selfish way. It's how God uniquely manifests through you. That is where you go. You look to that, you know. I think that's what Jesus wanted from all of us. You know, I think he wanted from all of us to have the courage to be that special light. God worked through Jesus. He said, there's nothing I can do that my Father doesn't allow me to do. Right, and that's what each of us is called to do. And he said, that which I do, you can do, and even greater. So,
okay, on the phone with Tom Shadyac. He's the guy behind the documentary, I Am. By the way, the website is iamthedoc.com. iamthedoc.com. You need to go to it and get freaked out. And, I mean, we're going to, you know, people got to order it, find it, buy it, and you hook into it, and, you know, drink the Kool-Aid, right?
Yeah. Again, it's not my Kool-Aid. This Kool-Aid has been around. Jesus mixed it, and, you know, many others have mixed it. And I'm simply serving what I've been served.
Now, in this doc, you interview a whole bunch of people, and you're asking them, you know, a couple of big questions, right? What's wrong with the world? What can we do to fix it? The God people that you interviewed, who were sort of, for lack of a better descriptor, the religious people that you interviewed?
Yeah, I consider them all God people, but I guess the most would be Desmond Tutu. I tried to get a few others, you know, from other faiths, but I was unable to lock into them, like the Dalai Lama. And but Desmond Tutu sort of represented the Judeo-Christian side of things. And you know, what I found fascinating, and I discovered this on my journey years and years ago, was that everybody is really saying the same thing, and some say, no, that's not true. But if you look at the essence of science, even today, quantum physics, and you look at the essence of what Desmond Tutu talks about, same stuff, you know. And Desmond Tutu said something really brilliant. Very simply, you know, I asked him what's wrong with the world. And he said, Tom, we human beings have operations on the box. God put operation instructions on the box of what we call human being. And he then explained, when you operate outside of those instructions, you get exactly the world that we have. You know, and that's why these mystics come along from time to time to say, hey, guys, you're operating outside of the instructions. You know, it's love. Remember, it's love. It's not money. It's love. It's not stuff. And so we need to realign and wake up to that again.
Okay, so the film I Am has been out there for how long now?
Been out about a year in theaters, and it's now just hitting DVD. You can pre-order it for Christmas. It's available January 3rd. You can go on Amazon and order it. It'll be on the Oprah Winfrey Network in January as well, and I think it's available on VOD, Video On Demand, right now.
Okay, all right. Have you been able to measure its, and I'm cringing even, here comes the word.
Yeah.
Have you been able to measure its success?
Yeah, it's not linear in this one, you know, but I can tell you that people's perspectives have shifted and changed, you know. They sort of, the scales have fallen off some people's eyes, and they see things differently, and that's huge. You know, what does that mean? I know that the world changes when one person changes, and I really believe that, you know.
But as I said earlier, man, I mean, this quote from Jean Vanier, the history of humanity is simply one group breaking away from another group and then putting up walls. You think we can honestly change that ingrained thousands of year pattern?
Absolutely, because it's not that old. But, you know, it sort of got locked in about 10,000 years ago. We had propensities and tendencies, but we had 174,000+ years of history where we weren't so much doing that. When we were a hunter-gatherer people, I won't get too technical, but once agriculture came into the picture 10,000 years ago, we settled, we could specialize, etc., we could store food. That's why Jesus said, do not even store food into barns. Trust your heavenly Father to feed you, because he knew that that could be insidious when we do that. But no, I absolutely do, and I'll tell you why. It's because how God made us. God didn't make us for that way to work. You see, so I believe he made us with love hardwired into our very cells. And I could go into a lot of science about that. I'll be very simple here. But even the witnessing of kindness, of an altruistic act, lights the body up. You get a hit of what you call nature's chocolate. And oxytocin is released just when you see something beautiful. That's why Oprah was so popular. She was a drug pusher. And I told her this, and she smiled, because it's the drug of connection. When she shows a family healing or doing something kind for someone else, which she showed every day on her show, you light up. You get a hit of this thing called oxytocin. So that's how we're wired. And I know there's a story out there that we're all bad, and I simply don't believe that. I question that story.
But at the core of that social division that we've seen over how many years, I see religion a lot these days. I mean, these days, I think you can see it more today than maybe ever before. But the reality is that at the core of every religion are these core principles or doctrines. And those core doctrines, especially amongst the monotheistic religions, state fundamental differences which simply don't allow room for agreement. Therefore, as long as we have religion, will we have division?
Well, religion is beautiful when you use the original term. Religion is to do something religiously. So when someone celebrates a Seder, that's beautiful. It's traditional. It's you do it religiously. When I pray each day, that's done religiously. But the religion that divides, which again is based on dogma, the law. You know, that's why Jesus said, you know the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. And that's where the divisions come in. So religions can exist beautifully as long as we stay focused on what we do religiously. But as soon as we say, there's one thing that if we're going to pass a law, let's just pass this law, that the law that says my religion is better than yours. You know, that I know I have all the secrets and I have nothing to learn from you. If we're going to pass a law, let it be that law.
Yeah, because I'm processing this as we're yapping here. Like, I think Christ came to end religion. That's the reason they killed him. You know, he
beautiful. I love that. That's wonderful. Now, he doesn't have to end the difference in humanity, because again, let your family celebrate the traditional way that you celebrate it. That's beautiful. But the religion that divides, I think that's beautiful.
Well, yeah, because the religion divides, you know, what's the greatest thing of all is love, okay? So as long as you lead with love, you can, you know, you're saying a Hindu and a Christian can sit down and really understand, you know, Hindu, oh, there's many gods, and there's just one God. You know, monotheistic and a polytheistic folks can sit down and have tea, I guess, is what you're saying, as long as we're leading with love.
Of course, we're, believe it or not, we're still basically saying the same thing, because even in a monotheistic religion, we believe God's in all things, you know?
Yeah.
So we believe that God is in the flower, and then someone from another faith may deify that flower.
So it's
not that different.
Right, but Tom, I mean, it's been recorded that Jesus said these things, stuff like it, which suggest... that without accepting the atonement which comes from Christ's death, that there's no restoration of relationship with our Creator, according to the New Testament. So either Christianity in its purest form is either a lie, or Jesus is the one true way to restoring our broken relationship with our Creator, right? You can hear those people say that. You know that,
sure,
that they think ecumenism is BS.
Yeah, well, I get it. Believe me, I get it, and I'm sure I'm a heretic to many. And what I believe in my heart sincerely, and that's, you know, that can be changed. But I think it's all semantics and language. Are you telling me that we have a God that is so small that if I love you, that's not Jesus present? I need to say the name Jesus? That God, our God, is that kind of small that if I care about another human being or another form of life, and I would dedicate my life in kind to that.
Hmm.
Really? God's that small that he's going to say, you didn't say the name? You know, I mean, what kind of God do we have where we say that we don't understand the love of God, how much God loves? We don't even understand. We can't touch it. And yet we love our children more potentially than that God might love us to judge us. If our children, some of our children, God forbid, have stolen and even murdered, and our parents still love them even in their imperfection, what kind of a God created that parent that doesn't love that much or more? You know, so I don't think God breaks it down and looks at it like we look at it. You know, God said, I can't be absent from that moment. Wet does not leave water, you know. So I think we look at it this way, and we try to analyze it with our head. We're in the age of reason and the heart. That's why Jesus is the sacred heart, and the path of the Sufi mystics is the pathway of the heart. It exists in intuition and in our hearts. That's why Jesus said, where is the kingdom of heaven? You look for it here, you look for it there, but lo, you find it not, because the kingdom of heaven is within. It's right there. So I just don't think we have a small-minded God. White Martin Luther King, my brother.
Yeah, stop. Stop. What a schmuck. Unbelievable. No, I was processing. You're not supposed to do that on radio. It's supposed to keep going, not have the gap, not have the awkward pause.
No,
but...
I love that there's a moment. I love that there's a moment. Yeah, we talk too much, but we need that energy to keep people, yeah.
Tom, are you afraid of death?
You know, it's interesting. I just one day ago watched my dear cousin PJ Shadyac die.
Oh, he did die.
Stage 4 cancer.
Oh, man.
And he passed.
Sorry, man.
And he passed with such grace and courage that, can I tell you that the moment that I'll die, I won't have fear? I can't, but I can tell you that there is so much beauty in suffering and pain, and it was so painful. The word, actually, for passion is same, the rooting is pain. But it was so beautiful. God was in that room. Whatever you call God, there is something there. And I tell you, I think of it now. I've seen 3 people now die sitting in the room with them, my mother, my father, and now my cousin. Mm. And I call it the second birth. I call it the second birth. That yes, the physical form does die. It's what Emerson said, the finite suffers, the body suffers, but the infinite lies stretched in smiling repose. And that energy, that God-like beauty that we are, that Christ is, we are it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Okay,
so,
I'm conscious that you're kind of a big deal. People know you, and that you probably have things to do. And so I'm looking at the clock, and I just went, oh, my goodness. Are you okay with a couple more questions, or do you want to stop right stinking now?
I'm down, brother. Go, baby.
Okay.
You know, by the way, this is something that I teach my students, that when time, what is the thing that you do when time passes, you don't even know that time passes, do that thing. And when I get blessed enough to have a conversation like this with someone like you, who's genuinely passionate and so full of life and I'm done.
Okay.
We could be here to the sun.
You were talking about watching three people die, your mom, your dad, and your cousin. And but by the way, I'm sorry about your loss of a cousin a couple of years ago, your dad, but I think the loss of your mom, I mean, your mom suffered, man. She suffered too much.
Yeah, my mom did. My mom was in a wheelchair since the time I was 15. She was 35 or 30-plus years in a wheelchair. And couldn't move from the neck down. She was a semi-quadriplegic. And yes, it was. You know, I think maybe when Mom met the Maker, that that he said, "Well done. That was not easy. What you did. I needed someone to go into that family of overachievers and slow them down." And
wow.
I appreciate that you took that on. It took me a long time to come to that because I said the same thing to God. What the heck is this about?
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, that's perfect storytelling, isn't it? From the greatest storyteller.
Yeah.
You put someone to slow down the fastest people who are missing the beauty. And so I think there was a reason.
See, I grew up in the funeral home. I grew up in the funeral business from the time of, well, a young teenager. I saw stuff that most people have never seen in their life. And then as a pastor, I walked a lot of people through death. And, of course, also as a hospital chaplain. Well, last year I was asked to step down as hospital chaplain because I was struggling with my faith. But the times
where... That, by the way, that's the time you should be a chaplain, when you're struggling with your faith.
Yeah.
It's so funny. We have it backwards. You know, like you can run any church in my book when you're questioning things. But anyway,
yeah.
You were making up.
Well, no. Just the point simply is that I would get feedback from people saying, "Thank you so much. You know, you didn't preach at us. You simply asked and listened and shut up and you stood there in the corner. Sometimes we didn't even know you were there, but we appreciated that you were there." Blah blah blah. So thanks for all the thanks. But I think chaplains should pay the hospital to be a chaplain. The benefit for me in my life and my spiritual health, oh my goodness, I'd pay to be a chaplain again.
You have just articulated beautifully through your example my view on all of economy. So when I serve my art and I am blessed to be able to direct a film, I should pay you. And I should pay, should I not pay the person who may not have that blessing, who has to clean the floor more than I get? I have the blessing of serving that. I have the blessing of seeing art come to life in a certain way.
Hmm.
And yeah, I agree with you. But what we do is we commoditize those moments. And, you know, one day we'll say, "I'm the best chaplain. I actually get more money per hour." You have to donate a certain amount of money per hour for my services because I'm the best chaplain. And so we pervert it all and have it all backwards, you know.
Tom, what do you want us to do? Like, seriously. Actually, okay, I haven't seen the movie, right?
It's okay.
No, I need to say that. I mean, I don't read...
No,
the majority of times, well, actually, almost every time I interview an author, I choose not to read the book. It started because of laziness and ADD, but now I realize it's a smart thing because I want to ask the questions that an outsider would ask, not an insider.
Okay, understood.
And so having not seen this movie, I am, this documentary, I am, what are you selling here, man? Are you lighting incense and wanting us to, like at the end scene of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, join hands and sway back and forth and just kiss a whale and hug a tree? Like, what's going on?
that's one color of the rainbow, but I want the whole rainbow, you know.
What am I going to walk away from having seen this?
Well, what I hope, people say to me, this is not realistic. I think it's deeply realistic. In fact, if we don't wait, I call I Am the ultimate reality show. The way we're behaving is not reality. That's why it's broken. If you pour coffee on your keyboard, on your computer, it's going to break because that's not how a computer works. So I call I Am the ultimate reality show, and here's what I want people to walk away with. You'll see why it's called I Am when you see the movie, but I want them to know how they have the power to change things. So when you say, "How's it going to change, Tom? How's the world going to change?" I'm not interested in that question. I'm interested in how you behave. What does it mean to you? Who are you? What do you value? What are you living your life for? Are you going to live your life to birth something new, or are you going to live your life subservient to a system, the one that you were born into? So I want people to feel that kind of power and then to wake up. The whole spiritual call, if you will, is a wake-up call. It's an alarm clock for waking up to who you really are. That's it. That's it. If you get those ideas and you can start a conversation around those ideas, everything changes.
Christians are scared of you.
Questions are scared of me?
No, Christians.
Oh, I thought you said questions.
Well, that's cooler.
Questions are scared of me.
I wish I'd said that. That was cooler.
Christians are scared of me because...
Well, I'm not sure. You know, like, look, the only station that's going to have this kind of show, at least here in Toronto, is going to be a God station, right? So I'm on a Jesus station, even though I'm the black sheep of the family. So we're interviewing you, and, you know, you're not dropping the nice catchphrase, sort of focus on the family, Pat Robertson keywords, you didn't grow up listening to Keith Green, you don't have a What Would Jesus Do bracelet, I'm sure. And so because of all these things, you know, you're not dropping the, oh, okay, so we can breathe, we can trust you because you're one of us. You know, it's hard to figure out anybody where they're at spiritually. It's hard to figure out ourselves where we're at spiritually. But the especially the evangelical Jesus scene likes to be lazy in their thinking. And then when we hear someone talk and we're not sure whether they fit into our camp, we then rely on someone else, another big, you know, a Jesus leader to go, yeah, we like them. They're okay. So what I'm trying to say is I want people to sniff out what you're all about. But I don't know if the Jesus people are afraid of you because you're not a freak like they are.
Well, you know, I don't know whether they have any fear of.
I didn't word that right.
Yeah, I don't know whether they have any fear of what animates me. It's possible, but
don't be quoting Gandhi on a Christian station, man.
yeah, exactly. What did Gandhi say? He said, "I very much like your Jesus, but I see so little of him in your Christians."
Yeah.
What I am about, you know, labels are so important to people, and they're not to me. If you say, people all the time say, "Are you a Christian?" I might say yes, and then you might say, "Are you a Jew?" And I might say yes. So was Jesus, by the way. And you might say, "Are you a Buddhist?" And I might say yes. Or I might say, "No, I don't subscribe to any of those boxes." Because if you call me a Christian, does that mean I'm a pre-millennialist or a post-millennialist? Does that mean you have to be baptized in water, or you can be baptized in oil? You know, there's the splinter groups.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is what Jesus not only taught but lived: love, love. Love your enemy. Love the person who is putting the nail in your hands and feet and throwing the spear in your side. Love, radical love. That's what I'm about. Everything else to me is secondary. Everything else. Love, love, love. And that means love in terms of how you do your business. It means love when you think about, how can I make money? Not for me, but how can I create resources for all of us? For all of us. So love, love, love.
Okay.
And so a Christian theist or theologian can say, well, you know, according to the second, council of the blah, 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 and then St. Thomas said,
that's Yiddish, I think.
Yeah. St. Thomas Aquinas said, that all this theology after a lifetime is straw because he saw God.
Yeah.
And he said, it's all straw, And so if I have any vision, I hope it is that.
You are a very different guy these days, and I wonder what impact all of this stuff will have on your work when and if a studio decides to take an enormous risk on hiring you for another Jim Carrey flick.
Well, it'll be interesting. This is the work, the conversation you and I are having, and if it manifests itself again in a film, I'd like to see that too. Let's see.
But if you gave it all away, and I mean everything. I talked to some friends about you.
Wouldn't that be spectacular? But go ahead.
Some friends of mine this morning said, "I'll bet you he's got a yacht hidden somewhere that he goes and escapes on." That kind of thing. But if you gave it all away, and let's say you were shunned by Hollywood, and you found yourself financially devastated, broke, on the street, homeless, whatever, what would change about you?
Oh, wouldn't that be spectacular?
Come on.
I'm telling you, God would show up. That's what I believe. Now, I'm not in that situation, so you can say, yeah, it's easy for you to say now. But I feel the principle. I feel the principle. Do I have enough courage to walk that principle? Let's see. But I feel the principle. Again, my friend, the poet Mary Oliver, says, Tom, when the money comes, I like to give it all away because then I can feel God show up. I can feel the knock on the door and the neighbors brought a meal. And we all know that when we have nothing, it's when God can do everything, right? So I've seen it before, and I've seen beauty come out of it. I see it in the life of St. Francis. He walked away from everything, right? I'm doing it slowly, right? I'm in a multi-year process of reducing this estate to what I consider to be reasonable. And reasonable is not what you'd call the 1%, you know.
Right.
It's to live as others live. So it's been done before, and I just see beauty, right? What turns the lump of coal? It's pressure into the diamond, right? So it sounds spectacular to me, you know? It sounds spectacular. So
yeah, but, you know, again, you're a single guy. You know, like the husband with the kids and the wife, and they got, I mean, you know, and that's why the scripture says, hey, you can do a heck of a lot more for God if you're single, so try to stay single. However, if you're too horny and you got to get married, knock yourself out. It sort of says that.
But you know, look, I'm not exactly sure where it says that, but a person who loves their family and that's as beautiful as anything and serves God. Look, God created all this. You know, I don't think God wants us all running around suffering. That's why when I give away the sort of final chapter, it's not going to most likely be everything. There'll be something something of reason, and what we define as reason, we'll see. You know, because I think we've had the way of the ascetic, and we've had the way of the greed, and that's the way that I believe that I'm to be a bridge for is the way to be in the world but not of the world. So I participate, and oh look, he's a monk, but he has a computer, and he actually. He has a bicycle and he surfs, but his life is dedicated, I hope, to this greater purpose, to being a breath for God. Yeah. You know, that's what it's about for me. You know, for somebody else, different. You know, somebody else, different.
Last question. What's your favorite T-shirt?
It's funny. I have about four of them, and that's it. So I can literally tell you all four T-shirts that I have. It's a new one. I have a few that are great, but, cause of what they say, but this one I made up for a friend of mine and his name is Laird Hamilton and he's the world's most famous water sportsman. He's a surfer and people will know him as I say his name, Laird Hamilton. He invented stand up paddle surfing and tow-in surfing and hydrofoil surfing. He is the Adonis of water sports and Laird has been blamed for inventing stand-up paddle surfing. So the surfers, the lay-down surfers, are mad at him for inventing surfing, you know, stand-up paddle, for being creative, in other words. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, bodyboarders were mad at, you know, surfers when they invented surfing, et cetera. So Laird has done the beautiful thing and embraced blame. So he has on his shirt, it says blame, and he's created a campaign, blame, as in blame Laird. So I made up a shirt for him this Christmas that says, an Emerson quote that says, blame is safer than praise. That if you are being blamed, as many will be blaming, I'm sure, this conversation that you started, Drew. Blame Drew. But blame is safer than praise. If you are being blamed, you're onto something. So, that's my current.
Yeah.
That's the current winner.
Like it. I like it. My engineer sitting across the desk from me is a T-shirt maker, and he's got some great ones. And the first one I liked that he walked in here with one day with, it says, the Christian right is neither.
All right. Well, you said that. I've got enough people that are going to be upset with me. So
listen, IamTheDoc.com is the website you got to go to. IamTheDoc.com. Tom Shadyac is who we've been chatting with. He is the big cheese behind this. And you're a shaker and a mover in the world of souls, I think. You know what I mean? I don't know quite if I worded that properly, but you are busting some guts out there. You're a big pain in my spiritual backside is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I love that. I love that I've disturbed you. That is very good. That's very good. Most people would rather be distracted, they say, than disturbed. So that the fact that something's gotten in is a good thing.
Yeah.
Listen, call me for more disturbing anytime. I'd be happy to do a part two of this.
Yeah. Tom, thank you. Thank you so, so much. And I hope you have a fantastic Christmas. I hope God shows up in some kind of a way that freaks you out.
Well, he did today in this phone call. So, you know, doubt is too lonely a pain to know that faith is his twin brother. And I love that you doubt.
Nice quote.
That's a Khalil Gibran quote.
Yeah.
So thank you for doubting.
Okay, man.
Thank you for doubting. All right, brother.
Thanks, Tom.
Do it again. Peace, man.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Tom Shadyac. Wow. You know, it's interesting. I'm glad we didn't book Lionel Richie for that last half hour.
Yeah. See how God shows up?
Really? That you're going to throw that at me?
I am, because it's true, dude.
You're such a jerk.
You're a knob.
Even though you're American, you're still welcome. Call toll-free 1-877-JOY-1250.